It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, one man's journey from a refugee camp in Tanzania to aerospace engineering at Iowa State University. But first, many trauma survivors have found relief in the practice of yoga or Tai Chi. Much of the support for these practices as therapy for trauma survivors has come from powerful personal stories or anecdotal evidence. Now, Matthew Vasquez, assistant professor of social work at UNI, and Tracy Ludwig, a social worker at Mercy One in Cedar Falls, have spent the last 3 years researching the effects of trauma-sensitive yoga. They've also developed their own evidence-based approach called trauma-responsive yoga. They'll be presenting their research at the International Society for Trauma and Dissociation in San Francisco this spring, and they are here with me now. Hello, Tracy.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
And hello, Matthew.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you both so much for being here. And Tracy, I'd like to start with you. Can you describe for us what trauma-sensitive yoga is? Give us a definition.
Yeah, certainly. So I think maybe before just jumping right into that, just a maybe brief comment about what trauma is. So just because I know that it's a very relative phenomenon, and what might be traumatic for me might not be traumatic for you. It's a damage to the mind body that occurs as a result of a single or multiple events. It can bring overwhelming stress that certainly can exceed one's ability to cope. And this can bring about disempowerment and disconnection. So, specifically for the study that we will spend more time looking at, we looked at women ages 18 and above who really endured trauma from a variety of adverse circumstances, such as childhood, sexual, physical abuse, domestic violence, medical issues, sexual assault, loss of loved ones. So with that, the trauma-sensitive yoga, which was actually developed by the Trauma Center out in Massachusetts, it is a form of gentle yoga, and it's really designed to address specific symptoms related to trauma exposure, which many of the aspects of this modality do differentiate from what I think our listeners might be known as with the traditional yoga.
Okay, so give me some examples of how trauma-sensitive yoga is different from the practice that probably a lot of us are familiar with.
Sure. So I think one of the biggest things is definitely the language that's used. The cues that we offer to our participants are very invitational. We're not giving directions or commands. We use words, phrases like, I invite you, or if you would like. We also do practice making choices with our participants. So what we really know about trauma is about a lack of choice. So we want to give our clients not just modifications, but choices to engage in different forms or movements. We want them to wonder if this is something that they want to do. Another one would be just really focusing on the present moment experience. So healing comes from, you know, really the ability to live and feel safe in the present moment. The concept, what the research really hones in on is interoception. That is that, you know, feeling what we feel and taking action on that. I think all of us as listeners can relate to the feeling of hunger, that sense that you get. And it urges us, hey, if I'm hungry, you know, I'm going to go get something to eat. Well, the majority of trauma survivors that we work with, interoception is very underactivated. So there's a lack of being in tune, paying attention to those sort of signals that the body sends. And then lastly, I would say a big piece of this that sets it apart is we really have a non-coercive, non-manipulative format, so we want our clients to take action for themselves. So we're not assisting or touching. We really, we're not controlling or imposing, you know, what we think they should be doing or how that should look. The phrase even poses itself, we stray away from only because many of the survivors have a history of having to have had to pose for the abuser. So we use words like forms or movements. And then finally, I would say even with breath work. So if you go to traditional yoga, that's a huge emphasis. But in this practice, we really like to minimize the breath work only because we know that that breath oftentimes is the doorway to that original trauma. So if I held my breath during trauma and I'm asked to do that in a yoga class, it can really, really be triggering.
So let me ask you, and Matthew, I'll give you an opportunity to go first. What attracted you to researching this kind of yoga practice? When did you first get involved?
Well, it started with me when I first started as a clinician fresh out of my social work program. I had been trained in more traditional types of psychotherapy, which pretty much call for you create a treatment plan that's based on the presenting symptoms of your client. So, for example, if somebody is struggling with anxiety, depression, substance abuse, et cetera, you kind of start there and you develop some kind of treatment to be able to address those symptoms. Well, over the years, as I was practicing, I began to realize that I wasn't really able to, I was able to do some work with them, make some progress, but I always seemed to hit a wall. And it was those particular clients that I hit walls with that the one thing they had in common, the one thread really that brought them all together, was the fact that they had had extensive, long histories of trauma. And as I began to get more information and more education and training on the effects of trauma, I realized that I couldn't just be working in their mind. I had to start addressing what was happening in their body, their pain, the stiffness, or as even Tracy said, many of them couldn't even really feel. They no longer really had any sensation of pain, or they couldn't even tell me what they were feeling. And so how can you help someone to emotionally regulate or even use a coping skill if they don't even know when to use it? So as I began to get more advanced training in trauma, I began and started to use these techniques, really work in the body and start to flush out some of that long-term trauma. Many of my clients who had had for most of their life years of anxiety, depression, self-harming behavior, substance abuse, over the course of the treatment, it was starting to go away. I had people that no longer had anxiety that were smiling. Their posture changed. Their self-harming, even hallucinations that were trauma-related started to go away as well. So that really was encouraging, incredibly motivating, and actually really influenced the trajectory for the PhD work that I did and my academic career.
Well, and when you were starting to experience the benefits of trauma-sensitive yoga, that was also combined with the other traditional kinds of treatment that you had been using before, right?
That's correct. And so for this particular study, this is not a study where we're just comparing the effects, for example, of trauma-sensitive yoga compared to just traditional talk therapy. For this particular study, it was required that every single participant who was either in the trauma-sensitive yoga or the Chen-style Tai Chi practice, they had to be seeing a regular clinician at that time. So the understanding is you still need the talk therapy. You still need to work in your mind. But this was an approach that allowed people to also really work and start to be more in tune with their bodies.
Tracy, what first drew you to this practice?
Well, a lot of the same similarities that Dr. Vasquez noted. I was primarily trained right after, graduate school and working in a lot of the cognitive behavioral approaches. And just like he mentioned, you could see your clients dissociate. They become immobile or just highly activated, and knowing that resides in the body and needing to really work and address the body. Sometimes with a lot of clients, just going there first, and then they're able to better sort of unpack, maybe in a verbal or cognitive way, some of the trauma details.
Can you give me an example of something that you saw that made you feel like this could be the key that I was looking for to help unlock some of these issues?
Right. So I'm thinking of one particular client who, when we speak of the introception and that low awareness, one particular client of mine, you know, grew up in a very adverse household as a child, and rarely, or oftentimes, I should say, was hungry. And so that whole concept of being aware of the body, of those signals of hunger, and even then translates into adulthood. And I'm working with her, and she was consistently losing weight. And, you know, in talking with her, it's she revealed, well, I don't really feel hungry. I don't eat. I might eat one meal a day. And we really sort of talked through that. And she also participated in the yoga group. And at the end, she was able to just hone in on just those small little sensations. For many of us, hunger is a big thing. But for her, just picking up on, you know, a subtlety sometimes, or things that many of our clients don't respond to pain, as Dr. Vasquez mentioned, and would exercise, run miles and miles and miles, and then their bodies were hurting and aching because they missed those cues. So
I want to talk more about this research study in a moment. We're going to have to take a break. But the research study has focused on women. Why did you choose to focus the study only on women?
Well, a couple reasons. First, most of the other studies that we have that have come before us and have been published have primarily used only samples of women. And they don't really talk about why that is. But I would assume one of the reasons is because, especially if you're doing mostly a yoga, typically it's harder to find men to want to participate in that specifically. They're generally, I think, among women, there's more of an acceptance of doing yoga. So we started with that, wanted to do something fairly simple, but hopefully we want to expand the study to both men and women in the future.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Matthew Vasquez, Assistant Professor of Social Work at the University of Northern Iowa, and Tracy Ludwig, a social worker at Mercy One in Cedar Falls. We're talking about trauma-sensitive yoga. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, one man's journey from a refugee camp in Tanzania to aerospace engineering at Iowa State University. But first, we're talking about trauma-sensitive yoga, and we're also talking about a new evidence-based approach called trauma-responsive yoga, developed in Cedar Falls, Iowa. With me, Matthew Vasquez, Assistant Professor of Social Work at UNI, and Tracy Ludwig, a social worker at Mercy One in Cedar Falls. They've spent the last 3 years researching the effects of trauma-sensitive yoga and working on their trauma-responsive approach. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. Karen Mitchell has been a part of this study. She found trauma-sensitive yoga after her husband died of a heart attack in her arms. Karen, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I'm so sorry for your loss. I can't even imagine how difficult that was and is for you. Can you tell me what drew you to trauma-sensitive yoga, what you were experiencing that made you feel like you needed something more?
Well, Harry's death certainly threw me into a state of real self-reflection and searching. And I had been doing meditation and trying to get more in touch with what I was feeling and being present in the moment, because I felt like right after he died, I really detached. And I was trying to get back into that. And I had a very unusual gynecological appointment that threw me into flashbacks to some things that had happened to me as a child, and also threw me back to that moment of feeling totally helpless and unable to do anything while I felt Harry slip away.
So this fresh trauma awakened old
traumas. All the other, yes, yeah. Yes. It's like you go to that dark side and all of this stuff is still there, and it just came boiling up. And I was totally taken aback by it. And a friend of mine said, I have this therapist, and she's really good. and you should maybe go to her. And I said, well, what is her specialty? And she said, trauma. And I thought, well, I'm not really a trauma victim. And my friend said, yeah, Karen, you are. And so I made an appointment, and we talked, and she said, after a couple of sessions, she said, I want to tell you about this study and that I think you might be qualified for, that you might qualify for. And she explained it to me and gave me some literature. And at the same time, I teach at UNI, I received an email about a one-day conference on campus that was specifically about the techniques that we've been talking about this morning. And I thought, oh, I can find out more information. This is great. So I talked to my therapist.
Which is Tracy.
Yes. And I went to the one-day conference and realized, yes, you know, this would be something that seemed to me to go with what I believed about what I needed to do in order to get well. And that was to really be more in touch with my body. There is a tendency, I think, for us to push down things and not allow to almost cut off our head from our feelings and not be totally in touch. And I'm very much about holistic teaching and holistic medication and therapy. And I wanted something that would do that.
Bring you back to
right.
your body.
Bring me back to my body.
Now, in thinking about participating in this study and trying the practice of trauma-sensitive yoga, I think, you know, in our culture, we have some stereotypical ideas about who does yoga and who can do yoga.
Oh, yes.
Did
absolutely.
You have some doubts about whether you could
do this? I am a very large woman. I am a full-figured woman. And I thought, you know, I'm going to get down on that floor and never be able to get up again. And I was a little bit worried. And not a little bit. I was a lot worried. But I trusted Tracy. I liked the fact that it was a very small group. I felt very good about the fact that if I couldn't do something, I could make up something that worked for me that was similar.
You were in control.
Yes, absolutely. And what was so amazing to me, Charity, was that I started out maybe being able to do about 65% of a 50-minute class. You know, I was making adjustments most of the time. And sometimes just sitting on my mat and breathing, you know, practicing breath. And we got to the end, and Tracy gave us a prompt to really think about that first day and to think about a time in the middle of the 12 sessions and then to compare that to where we were at the end. And I was amazed. I was doing probably 90 to 95% of the work. I wasn't doing it necessarily perfectly, but there really is no perfect. I was doing perfect for Karen.
Yeah.
And that was good enough, more than good enough. I was delighted. And the big thing was, and this was the big discovery, in one of the very early classes, I realized that I was very afraid of falling on my face. And I had had a couple of really bad falls over the last decade. And it dawned on me that part of what I was doing was causing myself to fall. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I would get so spooked by the fear of falling that I would throw myself off balance. And I saw that happening in the yoga, and I started saying, well, what is it about this? And it was a fear of falling like into an abyss. And that was an actual metaphor for what was going on in my life. If I fell into this abyss, into this dark stuff that had happened to me in the past, who or what would catch me? And would I just keep falling? And once I was able to get over that, not only did I make progress in the yoga, but I started making progress in my life.
When you were making this discovery, tell me a little bit about the interplay between the yoga class and therapy. Was this something that Tracy was able to help you
yes.
come to the realization of through using both practices?
Yes, because I'm not a quiet person. So when this happened during the yoga class, I said, you know, oh my gosh, I'm absolutely petrified right now. I mean, I just blurted it out. And, you know, Tracy was like, what are you feeling? And kind of talked me through it, gave me some suggestions about how I could take care of myself. And then in my very next session with her, we talked about that in depth. And of course, I had had maybe, you know, 3 or 4 days to kind of write about it, process it, and try to figure out exactly what I was feeling in that morning, in that moment, what it was similar to that I'd felt in the past, and how all of that might be working together. Because the truth is, our bodies know. We just don't listen to them. Mm-hmm. They give us very, very clear signals. They are intuitive and smart, and we ignore them.
Yeah.
We just ignore them. And I see this not only in myself, but I see it in my students, in my class. I teach performance classes, and I often talk to my students about their anxiety about speaking, for example, and where do they feel that in the body, and why is it there that they feel it? And, you know, the same is true for me, but it's always easier to teach someone else than to practice yourself, right? So,
well, and Karen, do you, clearly this has been a really powerful experience for you, but, and we'll talk about this in a moment with the research, but this is not a cure for trauma or for PTSD. Mm-hmm. What do you have to do to help maintain this breakthrough? Is this something that you have to really do maintenance on?
Yes, absolutely. You know, you learn practices, you learn coping mechanisms, you learn what to put with that. Like I mentioned that I write, and I write through a lot of the things that I discover. My writing has really taken off. That has been amazing as well. My creative energy is just soaring right now. It's amazing what I've tapped into.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I just, you know, I'm right at the cusp of retirement, and to discover all these things at this point is an incredible gift. And I never thought that, you know, losing Harry would give me would open a window into an entirely new kind of creativity. I just didn't think that was possible.
Yeah.
But it has. And I think it's because I really, really wanted to go on living. You know, the day he was buried, I felt like a huge part of half my soul was buried with him. And I thought, you know, Karen, he would not want this. He would throw this back at you. You know, he would say, no, girl, you know, woman, go forward. You know, be your best self, be better, have a life better than what we could have had together.
Oh, Karen, I'm so glad that you have found this way forward, and thank you so much for sharing your
story
with
us today.
Oh,
thank you for letting me say this. This is a big part of my life, and if it helps someone else, then bravo.
Karen, thanks so much. Karen Mitchell, she's been part of this study, and we have a few minutes left. Matthew, can you give me an idea of what you have discovered from this study? Because Karen gave us this incredibly powerful story, but how do you quantify that? What can you find that shows you that this practice really does have quantifiable benefits?
Well, we've been doing this study for about 3 or close to 3 years now. Both myself, Dr. Ashley Kaiser Moon of the UNI Sociology Department have just been collecting the data from the responses. And we're at the point right now where we can determine that both the trauma-sensitive yoga and the Chen-style Tai Chi do have there is some effects there where we are seeing reductions in mental health symptoms, anxiety, depression, and especially trauma. We don't have the numbers quite yet to make a definitive statement that they are more effective than just regular talk therapy, but we're hoping that in the spring we're doing our final round of recruitment and we can get the final numbers that we need to be able to say that. However, I will say that we also have done or conducted interviews with the participants. And that is where we have gotten some really fantastic stuff that really reflects a lot of what Karen was talking about here. I can speak to some of that, and Tracy can as well. But one of the big things that has really come out, especially of the trauma-sensitive yoga, is that this idea of, so Tracy was talking about that person-centered language where it's more invitational. So you have the ability to choose and to move the way that you want. Every single participant who has been involved in the trauma-sensitive yoga study who has agreed to be interviewed has stated that the consistent repetition of being able to hear that you have the power and the ability to move the body the way that you want has been extremely powerful. And it might, for me and you, sound kind of unusual because, yeah, we can move our body however we want and we have the power to do that. But as Tracy alluded to in the beginning of the session, many of the trauma survivors that participate, they have been told how to move their body. They have not really had that control, and over time, they lose that ability to even recognize that their body is actually their own. So being able just to have that invitational language and over time practice this ability to have choice and to start to be more inside of your body, it also creates a greater level of acceptance. We have some people who have major medical problems, and over time, their bodies start to fail them. And so they create a resentment toward their body. I don't like my body. I hate my body because it's constantly sick. And it's through the trauma-sensitive yoga practice that they've learned over time to be like, actually, this body's strong. This body is actually can do the things that I want it to do. This body's actually a beautiful body. And those aren't things that in a regular talk therapy, you know, if I was to tell somebody, I want you to accept yourself, that doesn't really work because it's just a cognitive thing. These people have to practice it, and that's what we're beginning to see more and more in the research.
Now, with the time that we have left, just a couple more minutes, I want to talk about trauma-responsive yoga because, as you guys mentioned earlier, trauma-sensitive yoga is something that originated in Massachusetts. It's a practice that is taught. Trauma-responsive yoga is something that you have developed, incorporating the clinical knowledge that you've gained through this research and through your own practices. Mm-hmm. Tracy, can you give us a fairly short, I know
sure,
it's probably longer,
yes,
but definition of what trauma-responsive yoga is.
So, like you mentioned, bringing back the trauma-sensitive yoga training from out east, I brought it back here to Iowa, to the Midwest, and quickly realized upon doing this study that I was kind of limited in what I could fulfill because so many people were coming forward and interested, and the study was revealing some really good results, and really started to think, how could we be of service to a greater area? How could we expand for greater impact, if you will? So extending that reach really in the Midwest. And so trauma-responsive yoga does share some major underpinnings of trauma-sensitive yoga, but the real highlight, the real difference is sort of a depth and a comprehensiveness of a neuroscience component that mostly is brought by Dr. Vasquez. So, but ultimately, really, I would thank our participants because they've really helped us shape and sort of collaborate with some new modifications and I would say improvements from trauma-sensitive yoga, just really based upon their feedback, things as such as Karen is sharing, just to really sort of tailor the training. So that is an upcoming training that we're offering called.
So you're bringing other practitioners together.
Yes.
To learn how to do this.
Correct. So it's practitioners in the mental health field. It's yoga instructors. It can be first responders. It's really anybody that, you know, might have contact. Schools. Body workers.
So there's a trauma-responsive yoga three-day intensive workshop coming up April 24th through the 26th for mental health providers and others, as you've mentioned. So people can get involved that way. You're also still looking for people to participate in the study?
Yes. We are currently recruiting for for the spring. This is going to be the last round of participants that we are going to collect. And then the idea is we're going to analyze, see what the data shows. And then our hope is to find additional funding to expand the study.
Right. That's exciting. And do keep us posted on what you find and what happens in the future. Matthew Vasquez, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Matthew Vasquez, Assistant Professor of Social Work at the University of Northern Iowa. Tracy Ludwig, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tracy Ludwig is a social worker at Mercy One in Cedar Falls. We've been talking about their research project, looking at the effects and benefits of trauma-sensitive yoga. We've also been talking about their own evidence-based approach called trauma-responsive yoga. And there are opportunities for practitioners and teachers to get involved in this work. Coming up in just a moment, one man's journey from a refugee camp in Tanzania to becoming an aerospace engineer. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.